Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the fifth day of competition at the World Cup football tournament in Russia. In Monday's opening match, Sweden defeated South Korea 1-0 with captain Andreas Granqvist scoring on a penalty shot in the 65th minute that came after review by the video assistant referee, or VAR. The VAR technology is being used at the World Cup for the first time. The Swedes were awarded a penalty after a challenge in the box. The play initially went uncalled by Salvadoran referee Joel Aguilar, but as a Swedish player protested, VAR alerted the referee and he went to the monitor before signaling for the penalty kick. The Swedes won their opening match at the World Cup for the first time since 1958 when they defeated visiting Mexico 3-0 at home in Volna, Sweden. The Mexicans got off to a rousing start on Sunday when they upset defending World Cup champion Germany 1-0 in Moscow, Russia. Irving Chucky Lozano was the hero for the Mexicans. Chucky scored in the 35th minute, and afterwards he had this to say, and I quote, "It's definitely the best goal I've ever scored in my entire life." And this World Cup fun fact about Chucky Lozano, he's 22 years old, was born in Mexico City, and plays professionally for PSV Eindhoven in the Netherlands. In Sunday's other World Cup results, Serbia edged Costa Rica 1-0 on a curling free kick by captain Alexander Kolarov in the 56th minute. And Switzerland and five-time World Cup champion Brazil battled to a one-all draw. And here's another World Cup fun fact for our Voice of America listeners. It marked the first time since the 1978 World Cup that Brazil did not win its opening World Cup match. 40 years ago, the Brazilians drew 1-1 with Sweden in Mar del Plata, Argentina. Joining us now from the Russian capital, Moscow, is reporter Samson Omale, the Voice of America's Daybreak Africa sportsman. Sporty World Cup greetings, Samson.
Sporty greetings to you, Sonny. I hope Washington is as warm as Moscow is this afternoon, because temperature is about 27 degrees centigrade this summer Monday afternoon here in the Russian capital.
Great to have you on the Sunny Side of Sports, Samson. In Monday's opening match, video assistant referee technology used for a penalty kick as Sweden defeated South Korea 1-0. This is the first time the VAR technology has been used at a World Cup, Samson. What's your reaction to this VAR?
Leading up to this World Cup, the video assistant referee has been criticized. Others have dubbed it as controversial. But for those who are proponents of the system, they argue that a lot of the times, a lot of calls by referee that goes contested will be served using that particular system. And for this World Cup, is the first time it was introduced in any international football tournament, and that's the new video refereeing system called the VAR. It may be familiar to some fans that it was, you know, tried in England during the FA Cup this season, but there's still plenty of confusion about how the system actually works and what decisions video referees can decide on. And as we see in the game between France and Australia on Saturday, with France earning a penalty thanks to a video referee referral, we saw the same thing again coming into play in the Swedish game today. And so for me, if it helps in making some of the calls go the right way, I think it's a welcome development. But sometimes, again, the calls are contested. that even with the assistance of the VAR. So I think some fine-tuning needs to be done so that we can have an acceptable method. Because sometimes, again, the fans may, who are in the stadium may also have their own judgment on some of the calls by the referees. So it's quite a contestable system, but we hope that as it's deployed for more tournaments, it will be fine-tuned to ensure that a game of football is given the best in terms of officiating.
Samson, five African teams on the pitch in Russia. Three have already played their first matches, Egypt, Morocco, and Nigeria. Unfortunately, losses for all three teams, the Egyptians, the Moroccans, and the Nigerians, and no goals for those three African teams. What's your general impression so far, Samson, on the performance by Africa?
Leading up to the 2018 FIFA World Cup, a lot of people have given this tournament in terms of how far the African teams will go to the likes of Morocco. And what we saw Morocco do is something that broke a lot of heads of a lot of people, because they actually held on and, of course, prevented Iran. And they actually, both teams went out to contest for the three maximum points, only for Morocco to fall like a pack of cards towards the tail part of that encounter, losing in a very, very humiliating, I would say, manner in the last minutes of added time in that game against Uruguay. And same thing also happened with Egypt. If you compare the performance of the North Africans with what we saw with the Super Eagles in Kaliningrad on Saturday, it will best be described as dismal. If you look at what the Super Eagles did, a lot of people thought, the last two games they lost were just a dress rehearsal. And, it was an international friendly that shouldn't be taken seriously, that the boys were going to get themselves together. But we saw that that actually didn't happen. And you do know also, Sonny, that leading up to the Russian World Cup, General Ross' provisional list had been criticized. It had been, mutilated by those who know better, I assume, and questioning some of the players that were included in the Super Eagles team. As a matter of fact, calling out some specific names. But General Ross did say that he's comfortable. He believes he's going with the best that Nigeria can offer to the World Cup. We're seeing that those players he's banking on are not giving him the kind of results he's expected to. And also, maybe we'll talk about this later, his formation has also been called to question. So it's a whole lot of very, very, for those of us who are from Africa coming to the World Cup, it's not been an exciting time really, seeing most of the African performances coming below par in this tournament.
Samson, you mentioned Gernot Rohr, the Nigerian manager. Do you expect he'll make some changes ahead of Nigeria's next World Cup match against Iceland?
Absolutely. I mean, if he doesn't make any change, then it means he's just condemned to fail. Because if you look at the formation he played a 4-2-3-1 formation, which is actually something Nigeria has never used to or have been used to in the past. That formation confused a lot of players. What Nigeria is normally used to is the 4-4-2 formation. And in this particular squad, what we expected to see was the like of Alex Iwobi, the Arsenal man, to be deployed to the left, while Victor Moses, the man from Chelsea, should have been sent to the right. We didn't see that happen. And even Mikel Obi, who is naturally known to be a defensive midfielder, we saw him playing very deep, into the midfield. And he was just a performance that is suspect. And you look at the fact that you have the likes of Kelechi Iheanacho, Ahmed Musa, who came on and didn't do anything substantial. They didn't do any. Their contribution to that team was not in any way something that you think can give the side the urge. Then you begin to ask yourself, what's also wrong with the selection? They have also questioned the substitute Gerard Rowe often makes, when he has to bring some other fresh legs in. And they're saying that sometimes the substitutions are not actually what is expected. It's not technically, sound to give you a different result. Rather, it compounds the problem of the team when they need some, injection to change the course of the game. So it's a whole lot of trouble and worry and concerns leading up to the game against Iceland in Volgograd this Friday. But we're hoping that General Rohr, having listened to so many of the observations raised after the first game, will have to make changes if he must win that game against Iceland and have any hope of remaining in Russia.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with reporter Samson Omale in the Russian capital, Moscow. Samson, talk about your trip to Russia and maybe the overall organization of the tournament by the Russians 5 days into the tournament.
I came into Russia on Saturday, and my trip from the airport, the Russian International Airport in Moscow, down to the city center was smooth. I mean, organization is perfect. Now, one thing I must give it to the Russian Football Federation and the local organizing committee is the fact that, you know, for this World Cup, they introduced something very unique and very different that has not been seen in other World Cup, and that's the fan ID. Now, with the fan ID, what that enables the fans coming into the country to do is that they go through this prior security check, and before you can obtain the fan ID, all your details are captured, and it actually acts as your visa into the country. And so, virtually, when you get into the stadium, every single fan has this ID stuck on his, hung on his neck, and that enables them to check who goes in, who comes out, who is in the country at what particular time. And so, security, by that default, is completely under check, and so they can actually pick out anyone who will want to foment any kind of trouble or truncate the peace in this country. Having said that, transportation is also another interesting part of the organization process, where you have fans with their ID enjoying free transportation with the metro, with the metro transportation system. And that's good, so that if a fan coming in, you don't have to worry as to how much you're going to spend in terms of moving from one venue to another venue for marches. And even going around the city, there are some relaxation, sport, recreational places you want to visit, you can actually do that for free. And for me as a journalist, I mean, I got my accreditation within 2 minutes, Sonny. Within 2 minutes, I was done. I was issued my accreditation card and given all that I needed in order to make my work as a journalist smooth. Even at the media center, it was well-coordinated and well-controlled and regulated, so that even as a journalist, if you don't have a match ticket that is given to you by the LOC, you may not be able to even watch any of the games. So I give the Russians a lot of credit for the organization they put into this tournament. 5 days on, we've not heard any complaint. We've not had any issues with traffic and all of that, and they should be commended for that.
Russia, such a huge country with different time zones. The sheer scope of this World Cup, is that a challenge for you and other foreign journalists?
Certainly, absolutely. It's a challenge. Now, I'm still in Moscow because it's difficult for me to make the 37 hours. Yes. Hear me again, Sonny. 37 hours of transportation by train to where the Super Eagles played on Friday, which is Kaliningrad. And that's the same country.
Amazing.
37 hours. Amazing, I would say, Sonny. And then from there, I mean, as a matter of fact, you talked about the time zones. And so it's not so easy. The logistics of trying to plan your travel is another experience in itself. So you need to sit down, properly analyze and look at how you want to plan your travel. There are certain instances where some travel journey takes as much as 2 days by train. And if you want to go by air, again, you have a problem of how expensive it is for you to make local flights here. So it's actually a huge challenge for journalists who want to crisscross venues, you know, to report the tournament. I mean, for Africa, you have Egypt, for example, will be playing like almost 8-11 hours apart from where Senegal is. And if Senegal is having a match today and you think that, okay, you want to catch up that match, you definitely will miss other matches that involve other African countries. So it's almost a nightmare when you think about how you need to crisscross venues in this large country in order to enjoy the best of coverage of the World Cup. But we're trying to, you know, develop some means of navigating all of that and ensure that we have the best of attendance at this World Cup, especially as journalists.
Samson, I did see Nigerian fans in the stands in that loss by the Super Eagles to Croatia over the weekend. Have you seen Nigerian fans and African fans overall there in the Russian capital?
Yes, there are lots of them. And I can tell you that this World Cup will go down in history as one that had the most Nigerians visiting or attending the World Cup, because there's so many fans. I met some at the airport during my transit routes on my layovers, who said, look, they had saved for 2 years. They had saved for 3 years to come to this World Cup. And they are routing for the Super Eagles. At the media center yesterday at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, most of the African journalists said, hey, look, they felt heartbroken when the Super Eagles lost that game to Croatia 2-0. And they said, look, they are supporting the Nigerian Super Eagles. And I've seen a whole lot of Africans, really, who are here specifically for the World Cup, and the stands can show for it, as you rightly pointed out. And more are still coming. I mean, I was on the phone with a few persons, a few Nigerian students, and they say, hey, look, they are preparing to storm, you know, Volgograd on Thursday ahead of the match on Friday. So we're still even expecting more Nigerians to come into Russia. I've seen Cameroonians, I've seen Kenyans, lots of Kenyans are here. I've seen a lot of Ugandans also, Cameroonians, Ivorians, you know, name them. There's so many from the length and breadth of Africa. They are in Russia to support their favorite African teams, even though their country is not participating in this tournament in certain cases.
Samson Omale, our Daybreak Africa sportsman, speaking with us from Russia's capital, Moscow. Samson, we look forward to your World Cup coverage.
Thank you very much, Sonia. It's nice talking with you. I'll bring some love from Russia with you tomorrow.
You're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with more World Cup news. Sporty World Cup greetings, Gwen.
Sporty World Cup greetings, Sonny. Over the past few days, we have seen some of the top names in soccer play in their World Cup openers. And hopeful fans have traveled across the globe from countries like South America, Saudi Arabia, and Africa to cheer their home teams on. With more on those exuberant fans, we'll hear two reports, first from VOA's Mariama Diallo, followed by Henry Ridgewell, reporting from Moscow.
Arriving for the opening match at Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, Russian and Saudi fans were optimistic and in high spirits.
We will win for sure. Yes, we will win.
I believe that Russia will win 2-0 because they are the best. Saudi Arabia is...
No.
Well, Russia did even better by winning 5-0. From claps to chants, football fever is sweeping Russia as it becomes the stage for what looks like endless festivity. Other fans are still arriving. This one from Peru is here to cheer on a team that hasn't participated in the competition in 36 years.
Beautiful city, nice and sunny, nice weather. We're going to root for the Peruvian national team. Nice.
Daniel Vielma flew in from Venezuela.
We feel that it's going to be a great tournament, and we hope that. We've been in two different World Cups, and we have really high expectations for Russia.
While his country of Trinidad and Tobago did not qualify this time around, Victor Comos made the trip and is supporting a team that has won the Cup 5 times.
I am supporting Brazil. Trinidad and Tobago is not here on this occasion. We were in Germany, but at least we were able to knock out the USA on this occasion, as they knocked us out in 1989. We expect an exciting game.
A great start for the Russian team, something every fan hopes their team will emulate. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Peru, Colombia y Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Costa Rica y Panamá.
Moscow has become a global mosaic of celebration. The streets around the Kremlin, heavily guarded and snowbound for much of the year, are transformed with Latin passion and African rhythm.
Everything is new for us, it's new culture, it's new language, and it's very difficult, the communication, but we are very excited.
The people are very nice and it looks very nice. We are all united, Americans, Europeans, Asians, everyone united.
The locals have not seen anything like it.
Everybody is so friendly to each other. This is an atmosphere of festivity. It's an extraordinary event, much cooler than New Year.
Some have traveled here even though their own countries have not qualified, like 12-year-old Abdul Jabbar from Sudan.
Hello, we are here in Moscow. The weather is wonderful.
Nigerians living in Russia put on a welcoming party for their traveling supporters.
We are going to win the cup. I'm optimistic.
The party to the fullest. Experience what it means by bringing all Nigerians together. They like grooving.
After the partying, a bit of culture. Moscow's ornate metro system is now a kaleidoscope of teen colours as visitors explore the city. Russia is eager to show off its cultural attractions, from St. Petersburg's art galleries to the less discovered Islamic heritage in host city Kazan. Thousands of volunteers are on hand to help visitors like Spanish-speaking Yulia, eager to ensure it is a smooth tournament.
There are no impossible situations. You just have to calm down for a second, think, and solve.
And if you get lost, perhaps the best advice is simply to follow the noise. Henry Bridgewell for VOA News in Moscow.
Follow the noise and apparently follow the beeps. I have to mention that after Mexico's surprise 1-0 victory against Germany on Sunday, jumping fans shook the ground so hard it set off earthquake detectors. Mexico's Institute of Geological and Atmospheric Investigations picked up ground movement following Mexico's game-winning goal and then issued a tweet that read, "Artificial quake in Mexico City due to celebration of goal by the Mexican team in the game against Germany." Boy, they are having a good time in Mexico City and in Russia. Sonny, we have something to look forward to here in the U.S. come 2026. And that's all from me. Back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. As Gwen mentioned, the World Cup is coming to the USA in 2026. Last week, the USA and neighbors Canada and Mexico won the hosting rights to the 2026 World Cup. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In Sochi, Russia, Sochi, of course, the host city of the 2014 Winter Olympics. Belgium on the verge of moving to the top of Group G at the World Cup. The Belgians lead Panama 3-0, and there's only a few seconds left in that match. Just to quickly recap the scoring, Dries Mertens opened for the Belgians in the 47th minute on a superb first-time volley. Definitely one of the best goals I've seen so far at Russia 2018. And then Manchester United man Romelu Lukaku, he followed with a brace for the Belgians in the 69th and 75th minutes. Once again, Belgium, they're on the verge of beating Panama 3-0 in Sochi, Russia. We're in the closing seconds. As I mentioned last week on the Sunny Side of Sports, Belgium has three, count them, three official national languages: Dutch, French, and German. But any way you translate it, the Belgians are the Red Devils of Belgium in the record books. We're full time in Sochi. Final score, Belgium 3, Panama 0. The Belgians go to the top of Group G. The final Group G match will be played later Monday when Tunisia, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, take on England. And that wraps up a special June 18th World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I did it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For nearly a decade now, Boko Haram has used violence in an effort to force its twisted ideology on the people of northeast Nigeria and has also launched vicious attacks in Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. At least 20,000 civilians have been killed in the conflict, and hundreds of thousands more across the Lake Chad Basin are suffering extreme hardship as a result of this violence. Indeed, Boko Haram and its offshoot, ISIS West Africa, has contributed to a major humanitarian crisis in the region. Some 2.5 million people have been displaced, and nearly 11 million people across the region need assistance to survive. The Lake Chad Basin humanitarian emergency is among the most severe in the world. People affected by the ongoing conflict are facing hunger in northeast Nigeria, including over 1 million in hard-to-reach areas due to Boko Haram's presence. According to the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, at least 1 in 5 households in Nigeria's Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe states may not be able to feed themselves without aid or may often go hungry through this coming September. Elsewhere, a significant number of people in Cameroon's far north region, Chad's Lac region, and Niger's Diffa region may also find it difficult to obtain enough food through September. On June 7th, U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria Stuart Symington announced nearly $112 million in additional humanitarian assistance to those needing help in the Lake Chad Basin, including nearly $102 million for people in Nigeria. The funds will provide life-saving aid to hundreds of thousands of people, including emergency food, nutrition treatment, shelter, health care, safe drinking water, services for survivors of sexual violence, and support to children separated from their families. The United States is the largest donor for the humanitarian response in the Lake Chad region. Since October 2016, the United States has provided nearly $761 million in humanitarian aid to the region. The United States remains committed to helping the people affected by the terrorist group Boko Haram and its offshoot, ISIS West Africa. A comprehensive political and security solution is ultimately the only way to bring peace to the region and end the suffering of the people there. The United States calls on the global community to follow our example and donate generously to address the basic life-saving needs of the displaced and the communities that host them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show.
Our topic will be men's grooming.
This is next Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look into the controversial topic of term limits for African leaders. Many heads of state disdain the restriction in order to maintain a grip on power. Term limits versus leaders for life on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.